Okay, so we've looked at how we can generate sequences of numbers that in some way look like they're random, and we've looked at how we do that for, well, again, genuine random numbers, distributed uniform 0, 1, and then numbers that we would hope would have, that would have some other probability distribution. Okay. And so the final question that we'll address is how comfortable are we that the numbers that we've generated genuinely look random. Okay. So, we're going to look at that, first of all, in the context of our random numbers, our uniform 0-1 distribution, and sort of, again, look at what it means to be random. And then we'll also say a few words about other distributions. Okay, so again, what we're getting is when we generate, we're getting a single sequence of numbers among an infinite number of possibilities. And, okay, so the first comment, usually I do the lectures in a different order, but we'll see similar concepts to what we develop here next lecture when we're looking at the output of our discrete event simulations. Okay. Now, one issue is that we don't necessarily know what the underlying distribution of the data is, but again, we want to argue that it's similar enough to a specific distribution, or discover that it's not similar to the distribution we had in mind. Okay, so we have a number of tests for assuring ourselves that our random numbers are uniformly distributed, and the two ones that we'll mainly focus on are the chi-square test and Runge's tests. And so we're going to start by considering the uniform distribution and look at how the chi-square test works for this uniform distribution, and we'll generalize it to other distributions and also look at exactly what our interpretation of this test is. We will also touch on Runge's tests and how they sort of how, again, a reason that the chi-square test might not be, or the chi-square test does not capture all aspects of random behavior, and the Runge's test can test sort of different aspects. Okay, so again, we're going to look at how chi-square works for uniform random variables. So to start off, we're just going to look at the easiest way to sort of understand the chi-square test is just to work through an example. And so we have now this set of 100 numbers, And we'd like to ask, does this set of 100 numbers satisfy properties of randomness? And so just looking at it, well, yeah, it looks random enough to me, but it, you know, there's no sort of guarantee. So the chi-square test tests, you know, a specific aspect of randomness, and that is the likelihood that numbers will fall into given intervals. Okay, so we consider dividing our interval 0, 1 into equal subintervals. And then we think about, well, what's the likelihood of a number falling into any subinterval given our uniform distribution? And yeah, the conclusion we would come to is that it would be equally likely that the number would fall into any given subinterval. And we would expect if we have, again, a number of values, they would roughly evenly distribute themselves over the subinterval. And if you recall, that's coming close to what our definition of probability was to begin with. Okay, so if we have k numbers, k values, and n intervals, we would expect roughly k over n per interval. Now, this is not going to be true for any given sample, but you would expect it to be falling close, and you'd expect the more numbers you have, the sort of closer you would get. Okay, so the chi-square test offers a means of deciding if the variations, so you're not going to get exactly your expected result, but are the variations due to the randomness of the sample, or that the underlying distribution is not what you would expect. Okay. So, for our, returning to our example, we choose to divide our set, our interval 0, 1 into 10 subintervals, so of 0.1 width each. And if you have 100 samples and 10 intervals, you would expect 10 samples per interval. If you go and actually count up the samples, you find that it's only infrequently do we actually hit exactly 10. Okay. So again, we might even be surprised if we hit 10 for each interval. Because it's random, you'd expect some variation. But the question is this variation significant? So does this variation indicate that we're not adhering to a uniform distribution? Or is it just sort of within the bounds of likelihood? So in order to decide that, we're going to have some measure of the variation between what we expect and what we've observed. So we can just take the difference between what we observe and what we expect. The problem with this being that if we sum that up, we'll always sum to zero. So in a similar way to variance, if we just took the expected value of a random variable minus the mean, again, we'll always get zero. So like with variance, we need a measure of that's not going to zero out. So yeah, you can do the obvious thing and square the differences. Okay, so this gives us a measure around our expected value. And for the simple example, that's actually, it would be fine, but we'll take a little, we'll take a little detour and look at a different example. So in this example, the expectations are not evenly distributed over the intervals. And so we have the same difference squared, because that's the way I constructed the problem. But if we look at the interpretation of the difference, we see that in row 2, we have a difference squared of 4, and that's indicating that the observed occurrences are half what you would have expected. On the other hand, in row 6, we have the same difference squared of 4, but here the differences are much closer to what you would have expected. You have 12 out of 13, 12 13th of the expected values. Okay, so somehow the measure is not capturing sort of the relative it's not properly capturing the sort of difference between what we observe and what we expect. Okay. So we need to include a measure then of sort of the difference relative to what we expected. And so we're going to do that by dividing. Dividing by our expected values. Okay, and so what you'll see when we do that, the value for row 2 would be much higher than the value for row 6. Okay, so you would have captured that sort of a difference of 2 is much more significant in row 2 than it is in row 6. So we normalize our difference squared by what we would expect. Okay, and in this case, that's not, we expect the same thing in each time, so we're keeping the same proportions. But if we hadn't defined intervals so that everything was the same, then that would not be true. And indeed, if we were trying to compare this distribution, if we want a single test that compares this to, you know, some other setup, then again, where the expectations are different, then you sort of smoothed away that difference. So the measure of difference then is our observed value minus our expected value squared over our expected value, and we do that for each interval, and then we just sum up for all of the intervals, and we arrive at a number. Okay, and so the question then becomes, well, what conclusions can we draw from that number? Okay, so that number is referred to as the chi-square value. And this value is randomly distributed. So if you take any different sequence, you're going to get a different value. Okay. So intuitively, what we would think is that the smaller the value is, the more our sequence resembles the distribution it's being compared to. And it can be shown that the distribution of these values has what's known as a chi-square distribution. Again, that will be contrasted in the next lecture. We're going to look at observed system parameters like averages, and if we take enough of them, we're going to be able to arrive at a value which we can assume is normally distributed. So in this case, we can't, but we can argue that it has this chi-square distribution. So what is the chi-square distribution? Well, it's a parameterized distribution, and it's parameterized according to the number of degrees of freedom. And in general, the number of degrees of freedom is the number of intervals minus 1, and also minus the number of parameters estimated for the distribution. And again, the idea is that if you define n minus 1 minus v of the system parameters, then the rest are fixed. Okay. So as the degrees of freedom increase for this, the distribution becomes more approximate to a normal distribution. And so we can see for sort of relatively small values exactly what the distribution looks like. Okay. So, how does our test work? What we want to do is compare, in this case, the uniform distribution to our sequence of numbers via our developed chi-square value. And so we will fix a chi-square distribution which is based on our degrees of freedom, and that's the number of intervals minus 1 or 9. And so we want to decide if our number is likely to have arisen because the values are uniformly distributed or not. And to do that, we want to reason about the probability of that number relative to some critical value. Okay, so what we do is we choose a significance, and typical values are small, like between 5% and 0.5%, and based on that, we can define a critical value, chi-squared, and we will compare our chi-square value to our critical value. Okay. And if our chi-square value is greater than our critical value, then we'll be in this yellow portion of the distribution. And what we can conclude is that it is not likely that we would have arrived at that value given our initial distribution. Okay. So we'll return to that that conclusion later in the lecture. But basically, if your value is too big relative to this critical value, then you've probably picked the wrong distribution. Okay, so we'll now return to our example, and we have a significance, and we're going to just pick a significance of 5%. We can look up there's tables which give you chi-square values, and of course they're relative to the degrees of freedom. And so here, if we look at the table, we can go down to 9 degrees of freedom and over to 5%, and we get a chi-square value of 16.919. Okay. So what that says is if our chi-square value is greater than 16.919, then it's not likely that we had a uniform distribution. What we see is our chi-square value is less than 16.919. So we conclude that our sequence is uniformly distributed, and that's with a significance level of 5%. Okay. So there's no absolute guarantee that it's uniformly distributed, but the likelihood is that it is, and we've put a quantity on this likelihood. Again, next lecture we'll be doing the exact same thing for our observed system metrics. We'll be determining a likelihood that they're close to the actual system metrics. Okay, so that gives us a straightforward way of reasoning about just likelihood of occurrence in intervals relative to a distribution. So it's, intuitively that makes sense that that's what we want to do. Okay. typically, what you want to choose intervals and sample sizes so that you have at least, you expect at least 5 occurrences in any given interval. And so you need a sufficient number of samples to compare, and in some cases you will need to adjust your intervals, and maybe for the uniform distribution we had an interval that was sort of equal because it's equally likely in the intervals. It's possible that what you will want to do for non-uniform distributions is define your interval size so that you expect the same number of occurrences in each interval. And what this will give you is non-uniform interval sizes. The test is going to be sensitive to the choice of intervals. The finer you make your intervals, the better the approximation. But again, you need to be able, you want to make sure that you're not sort of dropping below that, having a certain number of occurrences per interval. Okay, and so if you have a look at Banks, it suggests the following number of intervals relative to the sample size. So if you don't have enough, then you can't use the chi-square test. And then the more you have, again, you can adjust your interval size accordingly. Okay. So the chi-square test has it's based on the likelihood of occurrence of values within intervals. But that's not the only property that you would expect out of a truly random sequence. Okay. So, the sample below contains the exact same numbers as previously. And so if we used the chi-square test, we would conclude that this sequence was random. Now, if you look at the sequence, then you might have some concerns about whether it's truly representative of a random sequence. And so think about what happens if you go across each row. So, as you've probably seen, if you go across each row, then the numbers are increasing. Okay, so from left to right, and if we think of left to right and down the rows as being the sequence in which the numbers are generated, then you have 10 samples of increasing value, and then you drop back down and you have another 10 sequences of increasing values. And so, again, intuitively, that doesn't seem terribly random. If we have exactly 10 increasing numbers each time, it seems like there's something going on that's not wholly random. the sequencing of numbers cannot be captured by the chi-square test, obviously, so we need separate tests to capture the sequencing of numbers. Okay. And in general, these tests are referred to as runs tests, and they examine properties of the sequencing of the numbers. And so you can do two things. You can observe the runs and count them, and either too many or too few could indicate a problem. So you have runs up. So where a run up is a sequence of increasing numbers, and runs down, where runs down is a sequence of decreasing numbers. And so in our example, we have 10 runs up, for instance. We can look at runs above and below the mean. So are our numbers staying low too long or going high too long? And we can also look at then the distribution of the length of these runs. Okay, so all our runs up, for instance, are 10 in our previous example. So again, these are referring to uniform distributions, and we look at we obviously have to look at some fixed length sequence. So the maximum numbers of runs up or down is n minus 1, so if it's bouncing back and forth. And the minimum number of runs is 1, if it's either steadily decreasing or steadily increasing. And so what we can do is compare what we observe to what we would predict in a truly random sequence. And so, for a random sequence, we can derive, which we're not going to do here, we're just going to sort of use the result, we can derive that the average number of runs, mu A, is 2n minus 1 over 3. And the variance of A is sigma A squared is equals 16n minus 29 over 90. For n greater than 20, we see that A is approximately normally distributed. So, our normal distribution is, again, our bell curve, and we've got a sense for bell curves, and again, we'll dig into that more next lecture. We have a sense that of how much variance there is around the mean. And you can look up what's the probability of being any number of standard deviations away from the mean. Okay. And in our example now, we had 10 runs up of length 10 and no runs down. And what we would have expected is to have a mean, so number of runs of 66 and a variance on the number of runs of 17.46, just plugging in. If we look at what we actually have, we see that we are 13.48 standard deviations, so standard deviation being the square root of sigma squared, away from the mean. Okay. And again, if you're considering your normal curve, then this is quite unlikely. Okay, so for our second example, even though the distribution of the numbers is the likelihood of them falling into any interval is good, we see that the behavior in terms of sequencing is not good at all. Again, I'll just mention we have, you can do other runs tests as well. We can count the number of runs either above or below the mean and reason about their distribution. And so obviously we assume that our sequence, or the total number, is obviously the number above and the plus the number below. Okay. So again, we let B be the total number of runs, either above or below the mean. And on average, we would expect mu B as given below, and obviously the N on the denominator there should be a capital N. And the variance is, again, given by this rather more complicated formula. If, again, if our total number N is greater than 20, then we then we assume that if either N1 or N2 is greater than 20, then we assume that this distribution that we've gotten is normally distributed, and we can again reason as we did before. Then we can look at what number of runs we actually got, compare that to the average, and look at how many standard deviations, whether that's close in terms of standard deviations. Finally, we can look at the length of the runs that we produce. And our, if we look at, we have to look at how many runs we produce of any given length. And this is going to be a random variable. So we have yi, the number of runs of length I, and that's a random variable. Okay. Now, depending on the type of runs tested, so up or down, above or below the mean, we can define what we would expect the distribution of yi to be. So we can and then we can use the chi-square test to compare what we observe to what we expect. Okay. And here, L is N minus 1 for runs up or down. And N for runs above or below the means. And the degrees of freedom is L minus 1. The values for our expectations, our expected values are complex. I just want you to know that we can do this. I don't actually ask you to do it at any point. So we have a value for runs up and down, and then we have a value for runs above and below the mean. Okay, so that's given us a good way to a reasonably solid collection of tests that allow us to reason about random numbers, so distribution uniform 0, 1. And frequently, all you're doing when generating other sort of random variates with other distributions is somehow constructing them from these random numbers. So if you're convinced your random numbers are all right and your generation techniques are fine, then you're fine as well. It's possible, that there's no reason we can't apply the chi-square test to our numbers directly. Variates directly. Okay, so now we're looking at distributions that are not uniform, and we can think that we've now somehow decided what distribution we want our input data, or so to represent our input data, and then if we've observed, if we have sort of real life observations, then you can again determine whether your observations pick or sort of match the distribution you've chosen. And so we'll just again, we can apply the chi-square test, and we'll just see how that works for non-uniform distributions. Okay, so as I said before, if we have a non-uniform distribution, it's still desirable to get roughly the same amount of samples per interval. And to do this, we usually have to vary the interval size. Parameter estimation for the distributions will reduce the degrees of freedom. So again, the degrees of freedom is the number of intervals minus 1, minus, it was V before, now it's N, the number of estimated parameters. So if we're using an exponential distribution, we estimate the parameter lambda. So our degrees of freedom are at the number of intervals minus 2, for instance. Okay, so we'll just run through one more example. And here we have the chi-square test for exponential distributions. And we have a set of data here, and we want to ask, does it look like it's exponentially distributed? So what we're going to need to do is, again, estimate the parameter lambda, choose our interval lengths so that we will have roughly the same amount of expected values per interval, and then once we've done that, count up how many data points are in each interval and perform our chi-square test. So we have a CDF. So we're going to use as an example the exponential distribution. We have a CDF of 1 minus e to the minus lambda x. We can estimate our parameter lambda is 1 over the sample mean. And so if you grind it out, that you get a value for our estimated parameter. Again, we want to have sort of equal probabilities of falling into each interval. And so we can use our CDF to determine that. And for example, if we want 8 intervals, then you want to have a probability of 1/8 of falling into any given interval. And so that means that you're from one end of the interval to the next, you should accumulate 1/8 of the probability. Okay, so if we look, we can let AI be the endpoints of the intervals, and then you're accumulating 1/8 of the probability. If P is 1/8, and so IP equals 1 minus e to the minus lambda AI. So when I equals 1, you've accumulated 1/8. When I equals 2, you've accumulated 2/8. I equals 3, you've accumulated 3/8, and so on. And so all you need to do now is solve for AI. Okay. So I went ahead and did that, and you will get sort of the following intervals, and you can then count how many observations we get per interval. We've chosen those intervals, so we get the same expected number of observations per interval. Just looking, we can see that our observed relative to our expected doesn't really look that good. It looks like you have, for the observed, you have most of your occurrences bunched up sort of in the initial intervals rather than split evenly throughout. Okay. But the question is this a significant difference or not? And so, again, we can look at our, produce a chi-square value and compare that to the critical value. So we have 8 intervals, and our degrees of freedom then is 8 minus the 1, minus the 1 for the estimated parameter. And again, we can choose our same significance of 5%. And if we look, again, look up on the table, you have 6 degrees of freedom, and 5% gives you a chi-square critical value of 12.592. And in this case, our actual chi-square value is 39.6. And we conclude that our sample is not exponentially distributed. And so that's, again, with the significance of 5%, 95% of the time, it's not going to be, that sample will not be have been produced by an exponential distribution. Okay, so again, that's an example of how we can use chi-square tests for different distributions. Now, just sort of a final note on chi-square testing. This falls into the category of what's called hypothesis testing. And we can think about, well, what exactly does our test really mean? And sort of how confident are we of the conclusions we draw from our test? Okay. So, what we have been doing is making some assumption about our system. We've been looking at the assumption that our sequence of random numbers or random variates has a certain distribution. And trying to reason then about that assumption, to test that assumption. So that sort of an assumption is a hypothesis. Okay. So a hypothesis is an assumption we make about our system. And you will frequently hear what's called a null hypothesis, and that's a hypothesis where we assume that nothing out of the ordinary happens. And usually we have pairs of hypotheses that cover all the possible cases. So nothing happens and then something happens. Okay. So an example of a null hypothesis is what we've been assuming, the underlying distribution of samples is distributed uniformly. And this can be contrasted to the distribution of the samples is not uniform. Okay. And so you can think of the null hypothesis is a little more specific. We're saying that it has a fixed distribution. To say it doesn't is, you know, to say it has some other of an infinite possibility of distributions. Okay, so typically we denote our null hypothesis by H0. Okay. The hypothesis test, then, is a procedure that leads us to accept or reject our hypothesis. Okay. The tests are going to be based on sample or observed values, so we could be wrong. Okay. And so if you look at the possibilities and look at our graph, our chart here, we have the underlying reality, so either the hypothesis is true or it's not true, and then we have what decision we made from our test. So we either accepted the hypothesis or we rejected the hypothesis. Okay, so there are four possible combinations. The hypothesis was true and we accepted it, so that's good. The hypothesis was true and we rejected it. That's an error. We refer to that as a type 1 error. The hypothesis was false and we accepted it, so that's a type 2 error. Or the hypothesis was false and we actually rejected it. And so that's, again, good, our test worked. So there are two ways in which our tests can work and two ways in which our tests can be in error. So but now, typically, what we're trying to reason about is our, or have the ability to reason about, is our hypothesis, our hypothesis, okay? And we're not necessarily reasoning about the converse of the hypothesis. Okay. The significance level represents the probability that we make a type 1 error. Okay, so the significance level is representing the probability that we reject our hypothesis when it's actually true. Okay. And so if we think back to our exponential example, we rejected our hypothesis. We said it was not exponentially distributed. And so there's a 5% chance that we made a mistake. We could push that level up as well, probably. Okay. And so the question then becomes, what about type 2 errors? That we accept our hypothesis when it's not true. Okay. And so to try and deal with type 2 errors, we try and formulate two hypotheses. So we have our null hypothesis and essentially the converse of that hypothesis, so the opposite of that hypothesis. And so if you reject one, you accept the other. Okay. And so typically you're formulating your first hypothesis so you can calculate the probability of type 1 errors, again, as we saw in the second example of the exponential, testing the exponential distribution. Now, what we would want is a pair of hypotheses. So our underlying distribution is of a certain form, and then our underlying distribution is not of that form. Okay. And again, the problem with our second hypothesis is that it's sort of slippery. It's not very well defined. Okay. So the way we've defined the two hypotheses, type 1 errors for H0 are type 2 errors for H1 and vice versa. If we could test H1, then we would have calculated the probability of both types of errors. Unfortunately, usually it's not possible to determine tests for both H0 and H1, and sort of think about what we did to test our null hypothesis, and then you can see that you cannot do a similar thing for the negation of that. Okay. So again, you can think about trying to devise some decision procedure for which you'll then be able to calculate type 1 errors, and it's not possible. Okay, so returning to our chi-square test and seeing what we've been thinking about, we can fit it into the hypothesis testing framework. And indeed, I've been doing that throughout the example anyway. So we have H0, our null hypothesis, that the sample value has a certain underlying distribution. And that's the one we want to compare our sample to. And then the converse of that, the sample values do not have that underlying distribution. We have a test for our null hypothesis. We have the chi-square test. And so for a given significance level, we can compare our chi-square value to our critical value, and we can reject if our chi-square value is greater than the critical value. Okay, and that's exactly what we did for the exponential case. But if we return to our first example of the uniform distribution, that was not actually the conclusion we reached, was it? For the first example, we calculated the chi-square value, and we compared it to a critical value, and we accepted our hypothesis on the basis that the chi-square value was less than the critical value. And so this was equivalent to rejecting the converse. Okay. So what we really need in order to completely reason about this is to know what the probability now is of a type 2 error. And the answer is that for that we don't know. Typically it's going to be somewhat greater than our significance level. But we usually assume that it's sort of in and around, and that we're not going too far astray by accepting our null hypothesis. Okay, so what we see here is that there is an issue with a very precise interpretation of the probabilities, but it will give us a general feel for the acceptability. Okay, and again, generally people do use the chi-square test and are satisfied that are satisfied with drawing one or the other conclusion, even though sort of technically there is an issue with doing that. Okay, so we've looked at input modeling in terms of, trying to generate random sequences of random numbers and sequences of random variates. And then we have reasoned about whether or not the sequences we've generated or someone else has generated or that we've observed and we want to now fit to a certain distribution so that we can move on and use that in our model. We've looked at ways of reasoning about whether the fit for these is acceptable. So, next, the next lecture will then look at the output of our simulation models. So we've looked at how we, in these two lectures, we've looked at how we develop a simulation model and how we're confident about sort of the random, the modeling of the random elements of that model. And so in the next lecture, what we're going to do is look at how we draw conclusions about our system based on our observations from the random model. And the basic idea is that, well, we can look at sort of a single trace, and we can't really say much because, you know, it's a random trace out of many traces. So we can look at a number of traces and try to reason about the behavior, excuse me, based on a number of traces. Okay, and we'll be seeing similar ideas of sort of likelihoods and falling, and sort of our sample values falling within intervals of our actual values, so in a similar way to what we saw today with the chi-square test. So we'll do that in the next lecture.